Well, we're going to speak to somebody who keeps his details clear. That is Zafar Bengash, Crescent International. Zafar, are you there?
Yes. Hello, Phil. I am with you.
Well, thank you very much. We really need to talk to you because, I hate to use these kind of lines, but the fact is that if we were to believe U.S. military spokespersons, the President of the United States, his National Security Advisor, I forget which one it is now, and his Secretary of State, they're all speaking about Iran as though they might commit a war crime or an engagement or launching of a war against Iran because they say Saudi Arabia had an oil field that was struck by missiles. Iran has said those missiles had nothing to do with them. And the leaders in Yemen who've been under bombardment by the Saudis said, we have struck Saudi Arabia back as they deserve. And they're open to having a peace agreement, but they're not going to continue to be bombed. So why is the United States accusing Iran when we're talking about an issue between Saudi Arabia and Yemen?
Well, the bottom line is that as far as the Americans are concerned, they are all red-faced because they have supplied hundreds of billions of dollars worth of weapons to Saudi Arabia, including the so-called Patriot missiles that cost $1 billion apiece. And yet the Yemenis were able to launch drones, and each drone cost only $15,000. And they were able to bypass these expensive anti-missile batteries in Saudi Arabia that the Americans had supplied, and they were able to bomb the economic lifeline of Saudi Arabia. So there are a number of things. From the Americans' point of view, obviously, Israel is breathing down their neck. The Israelis would want America to attack Iran. There have been a number of incidents in the past as well.
Mm-hmm.
Iran has made absolutely clear that if there is any attack on us from any quarters, this will mean an all-out war, and we're not going to spare anybody. And so I think following that, if I'm sure you would have followed the statements from Mike Pompeo when he was in Abu Dhabi. There he said that I'm here because I want to resolve this thing peacefully. Mm-hmm. So a few days earlier, as you said, whichever national security advisor, and there have been so many of them running.
It's hard to keep track.
Hard to keep track, and Trump always threatening, we are cocked and loaded, etc., this kind of nonsensical cowboy language.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the Americans also realize that if they were to get entangled with Iran militarily, that although America can cause a lot of damage, so can Iran. Mm-hmm. To America's interests in the region. I mean, all of these puppet regimes in the region, whether it's Saudi Arabia, Abu Dhabi, whatever, their sand castles and glass towers, etc., will come crumbling down.
Mm-hmm.
There will be no oil flowing anywhere, and so the whole world would be in turmoil.
Mm-hmm.
But what the bottom line of this whole thing is that they simply cannot come around to accept that Houthis or the Yemenis are capable of doing this thing. This is pure racism.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Yemenis may be very poor people, but they have over the last several months been carrying out very daring operations. For instance, I can give you an example of an August 26th attack on a military base just outside Riyadh, which is perhaps the same distance as these oil fields and the Aramco facilities are. They struck them very successfully. And
mm-hmm.
over the last several months, they've been targeting Saudi airfields and hangars and drone hangars, etc., with pinpoint accuracy. So it seems that the Yemenis have been able to achieve the kind of sophistication that scares the living daylights out of the Saudis. And they can clearly see the writing on the wall. If this thing continues, that definitely the Saudis are toast.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why the Americans are trying to talk to Ansarullah, which is the revolutionary force of the Yemenis that is leading this fight against Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates and their Western allies, including the United States, Britain, France, etc., mm-hmm. that they want to have this matter resolved peacefully, because I've read several reports that if this war were to continue, it is quite likely that it would bring down the House of Saud itself. And so that's what the Saudis,
which of course something
about.
That Zafar Benghazi predicted, the fall of the House of Saud. Am I right?
The doomed kingdom of the House.
The
of
doomed.
Saud.
I keep Absolutely. Calling it the fall. The doomed kingdom.
That's correct.
Well, your book is, by the way, is really as I make not jesting. It's a very important and timely book, because the game they play is it does have an end game for them.
Yes, exactly. I think they are probably
strictly loyal. I mean, supremely loyal to the U.S.
Yes, absolutely. And so what we see is, I mean, I had written that book back at the end of 2014, when none of these things had emerged. But like, I just read the situation correctly to say that I see the trajectory of developments or events in Saudi Arabia in this direction, mm-hmm. and that these people are going to self-destruct. Mm-hmm. And I said that their shelf life is very, very short now. And mm-hmm. now we are beginning to see. I mean, I didn't know that, you know, the Saudis would be so foolish as to get entangled in Yemen. I mean, mm-hmm. I knew that they are really stupid, but I didn't know that they would be that stupid. That they would, like, you know, they have done terrible things in Syria and in Iraq.
Well, you know, you also point out they have masters, right? I mean, so you have London and Washington, and we have to keep an eye on London because they have a long history here.
Yes.
And when they want something, they have the fellow that they are the boss of say what they want. But how about this issue? It's very noticeable. In the past 2 years, we've had something nobody thought we'd see. Well, they probably thought it, but didn't talk about it. There's actually a U.S. base being built in Israel for the first time.
Yes.
Openly. And you say, why would they do that? But now, in the second most close government to the U.S., Saudi Arabia says they're going to take U.S. military personnel. Now, on that one, there is the story that the putting of U.S. forces in Saudi Arabia led to the creature called bin Laden.
Yes.
So what is this? Is it less likely to produce the same result?
No, I think it is definitely going to produce the same result, because, you know, it goes even further back to 1990 when American forces landed in Saudi Arabia, about 500,000 of them. And that is when this whole crisis erupted of bin Laden and his supporters and so on, because there is a religious dimension to it, and that is that foreign forces are, from the Islamic point of view, not permitted in the Arabian Peninsula. Mm-hmm. And the Saudis are violating a very important Islamic principle. And this is going to turn the entire Muslim world against them. I know that at that time it was bin Laden and his group, etc., but there was also a great deal of resentment in other parts.
There was common agreement on the strategic issue. No outsider can create a base there.
That is correct, yes. And in fact, you know, it's also from the military point of view, it is not going to solve anything. For instance, already there are American forces operating these missile batteries, etc., in Saudi Arabia, because the Saudis are too incompetent and too lazy to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, the Americans have said that they're going to send a few hundred troops. Now, I doubt very much if these few hundred troops are going to make such a great difference.
Isn't that, by the way, an expression of racism?
Yes, of course.
A handful of Americans, you know,
yes.
Photographs, cover on Time, and that's supposed to mean, obviously, they're in charge. 200 Americans in Saudi Arabia, they're in charge.
They're in charge, and they're going to defend everything and so on. And nowadays, you know, as we have seen, wars are not really fought so much by ground forces as through missiles and drone attacks, etc. And it is these that have really scared the Saudis. And I also want to point out that for the last 4.5 years, the Saudis have been bombing dirt-poor Yemen. They've destroyed virtually everything, every little piece of infrastructure in Yemen has been destroyed. Not only that, they've been, you know, they've bombed schools, hospitals, factories, homes, etc. And often these facilities have been bombed not once, but two, three, four times. They've bombed funeral processions. They've bombed school buses where children have been murdered. And on September the 18th, 4 days after these drone strikes, when the Americans were blowing hot and cold, the Saudi Deputy Defense Minister, Khalid bin Salman, who's the younger brother of Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince, Khalid bin Salman tweeted that we greatly appreciate America's role in defending its allies and its critical assets in the region, core assets in the region. So, in other words, the Saudis, after having spent hundreds of billions of dollars on weapons, they simply are not capable of defending themselves, and they still need the Americans to come and defend them. And I think what this whole thing, the way it is being worked or played out, is that the Americans are going to squeeze hundreds of billions more dollars out of the Saudis until they completely run out of money. And the fact that Aramco has been targeted by the Yemenis in such a daring and successful operation, the Saudis were actually on the verge of putting Aramco shares on IPO, international public offerings. And the Saudis' hope was that they would be able to raise anything from $1.5 to $2 trillion. But when you see that their biggest, the biggest oil refinery in the world has been turned into a smoldering wreck, Saudi Arabia has lost 50% of its export capacity of oil. Its liquefied natural gas facilities have been badly damaged. I don't think that they're going to achieve the $1.5 to $2 trillion worth of money on the IPO. And, of course, a lot of American companies are involved, you know, Chase Manhattan, J.P. Morgan, a number of other American companies, and it seems that...
All very patriotic.
Of course, but perhaps it seems that, you know, by damaging these, they would be able to pick up these things at actually, you know, throwaway prices. So, again, the Saudis would be... you know, as they say, that a fool and his money are soon parted, and that's what's going to happen to the Saudis again.
This is we're speaking to Zafar Benghash, Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought. I have it right, don't I? Crescent.icit-digital.org.
That is correct. You got it. Absolutely.
I got it the first time. You must be you. I've disappointed you so many times, but now I've got it. By the way, wonderful. Everybody should read the editorial you wrote on the Canadian elections, which are becoming embarrassing, and you couldn't have been more timely, and I really thought your remarks were right on the point. And again, it's Zafar Benghash. What about, I want to ask you this, there seems to be a game or an idea that there could be two Yemens. There are other states in the region who have or been speaking of the possibility of breaking Yemen back as it once was, actually, into two states. What is that about? Who's behind that?
Actually, until 1990, there were two Yemens. One was the south of Yemen, which whose capital is was Aden, and then there was the north Yemen, whose capital was Sana'a. And in 1990, they amalgamated and formed a single state called Yemen, the Arab Republic of Yemen. Right now, because of the fact that the Saudis and the Emiratis failed in subduing the Yemeni resistance movement, and the Yemeni resistance movement obviously controls Sana'a, which is the federal capital, so they decided that if they cannot drive out the Yemeni resistance forces, then they're going to once again split up Yemen and separate the south of Yemen from the rest of Yemen. So that's the second conspiracy that is underway.
So in case they lose, they'll try to take a piece of it.
That is correct, yes. And of course, you know, Yemen is a big country. The eastern part of Yemen is completely out of control of all the forces. In fact, it's largely controlled by Al-Qaeda. and ISIS forces in that country. But the south of Yemen is important.
With whom the U.S. collaborates and then doesn't collaborate and then does collaborate.
Yes. Yes,
the U.S. Isn't it true that they sort of play games? I mean, they actually know them quite well and sometimes help them.
Well, they created them.
I guess they know them pretty well.
Was the American creation, and mm-hmm. then they finance them, arm them, train them, and then they start to bomb them because they say, oh, they are a threat to our interests, so we have to go and bomb them. So basically, they use them as an excuse or a bogeyman in order mm-hmm. to advance their agenda for other purposes. Mm-hmm. So that's what they keep on doing with these things. Yeah. Now they are, of course, ISIS forces were sent to Afghanistan as well. The intention was that they were going to use them against the Taliban, but the Taliban were not going to take any of that nonsense. They were able to deal with ISIS mercenaries mm-hmm. quite effectively, mm-hmm. But the Americans don't give up, unfortunately.
I don't know that they can. speaking to Zafar Benghash, Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought, crescent.icit-digital.org. I think I probably ought to ask you a standard stereotype question. The Houthis are always in the Globe Star referred to as puppets of the Islamic Republic. Iran, is, to my knowledge, doesn't have any bases in Yemen. I'm not aware of their having any personnel there. But who are the Houthis, and what's all this talk about their being puppets?
You see, they have to. The media has to discredit these people because they have proved to be such excellent fighters. The Houthis are a group of people that are basically based in the north of Yemen. And they're nobody's puppets. Obviously Iran sympathizes with them, but there is absolutely nothing that Iran can do for them because the whole of Yemen is...
No, there's no naval air possibility. You can't go there.
Exactly. The whole of Yemen is under siege, both in the south as well as in the west. Nothing can penetrate there. And of course, there is no air link either. So this whole allegation that somehow the Houthis are Iran's puppets is completely false. What is true is that Iran sympathizes with them. It has repeatedly called upon the Saudis and other aggressors to stop their aggression, let the people of Yemen decide for themselves rather than the Saudis dictating to them. But of course, the Saudis don't listen. They think that because they have bought these billions and billions of dollars worth of weapons and they have the U.S. and Israel on their back, they can do whatever they like, but they don't realize that the Yemenis have never been defeated by anybody. I mean, the Saudis tried it before. The Egyptians tried it back in the 60s and got a bloody nose and had to flee. And so the Yemenis have a very, very long history of resistance to foreign invaders. And they are incredibly tough people. They live very simply, but they are incredibly tough. Mm-hmm. And they are nobody's puppets. I mean, this is a complete lie. It's an allegation that is made in order to tarnish them. Mm-hmm. Because, you see, if we want to really look at who is financing and backing whom, then I think what we should be saying is, anytime the Saudis and the Emiratis to carry out any attacks against Yemen, we should say the American puppet Saudis carried out attacks against Yemen with U.S. supplied weapons. But you would never hear that in the media.
I mean, we have the famous photograph of Trump holding the globe with the Saudi monarch, and Sisi, I think his name is, from Egypt, standing there, and Mrs. Trump. There are no photographs of the Iranians holding the globe with the Yemenis.
Exactly. I
mean, they were telling us they were going to take over. That was going to become an Arab NATO, wasn't it?
Yes, yes. and of course, the Arab army is being so incompetent, that they can't even tie their shoelaces in a hurry. So they're not capable of doing anything. And that's why the Saudis constantly keep on asking for the Americans to come and bail them out. Of course, the Americans also realize that if they were to get entangled with Iran, that they are going to get a bloody nose, that Iran is quite capable of defending itself.
And now, and also the Great Alliance, there was, at when the Saudis started this bombing, they were talking about having a number of countries come and help them. They had, they said they were going to have Pakistan, Turkey, I think Egypt. I don't think any of that panned out, did it?
No, it didn't. In fact, there were, they said that they had 10 countries that were a coalition of 10 countries. Egypt did send a token force, as did Jordan. And then, of course, there was the United Arab Emirates. And then they went to Africa and recruited some mercenaries from Africa and also some soldiers from Sudan. But as of now, everybody, including the Emiratis, have fled. The Emiratis, in fact, left after that. After Iran shot down a U.S. drone that had infiltrated Iranian airspace, and the Emiratis realized that soon after that, since the Americans were not going to do anything about it, that if they continued along this path, that very soon their own glass tower cities, Dubai and Abu Dhabi, are going to be...
So they became the canary in the tunnel.
Yes, absolutely.
They said, hey, maybe we ought to get out of here and leave this... Well, so generally the trend is that this is going to end in the defeat of the Saudis.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, there are commentators that have said that that the Yemenis are not going to stop there now, because in the southern part of Yemen, of Saudi Arabia, which actually is historically Yemeni territory that the Saudis occupied in 1934, that the Yemenis have demanded that they're going to take those provinces back from Saudi Arabia. So these are, like, you know, provinces of Jizan, Asir, and so on, that are right on the border with Yemen. And I'm absolutely convinced that the Yemenis are quite capable of doing that, because the kind of daring operations that they've carried out, they can definitely take those areas, because the Saudi soldiers are completely unmotivated, incompetent, they can't fight. Secondly, the other aspect is that the longer this war continues, the more likely it gets that the House of Saud itself will probably collapse, because, you know, the losses that they are suffering, they are already spending 8.8% of their GDP on this war. Now, that's a colossal amount of money that they are spending. And obviously, you know, they are in fact spending something like $72 billion a year on Yemen, on the war on Yemen. Now, $72 billion a year has been going on for 4.5 years. So we are talking about quite a lot of money from the Saudi, you know, treasury. And couple that with the fact that they want to, they've been buying hundreds of billions of dollars worth of weapons from the United States. So you can see that their economy is badly hemorrhaging. And very soon the Saudis would have no money. And when they run out of money, obviously all hell is going to break loose internally, because they have kept their, you know, fragile kingdom together by bribing tribes and princes and so on. And with no money, then all of that collapses as well.
So, as the gangsters say, the jig's up.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely.
Well, it's Zafar Bengash, and we do appreciate it. Thank you very, very much.
It's my great pleasure, Phil. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks. And it's the Taylor Report, CIT. We are on SoundCloud, and we are on Facebook. And one last word I'll say to you is Time Magazine published a picture of our prime minister, and it's kind of interesting that the Canadian media didn't have this story. Thousands of people knew all about it, and that it was family information, I guess, but Time decided to play a dirty trick on the Canadian media. Too bad for them. Anyway, it's the Taylor Report. Got to thank Braden, and we'll see you next week.